1148. Okay, Watergate got us out of Southeast Asia and disengaged vis-a-vis USSR. Our interests are now served there through China. It is against China that USSR now acts, not us. This is crucial. Program A must have led to all-out war between U.S. and USSR. The spirit in us prevented first Nixon and then Ford from aiding South Vietnam. So, if my reasoning is correct, we of the counterculture prevented World War III. We hamstrung the U.S. military machine. This counterculture did not arise ex nihilo, out of nothing. What were its origins? Consider the 50s. The concept of un-American held power. I was involved in fighting that. The spirit, counterculture of the 60s, evolved successfully out of the basically losing efforts by us progressives of the 50s, we who signed the Stockholm Peace Proposal and the Save the Rosenbergs, etc., losing desperate efforts. Very unpopular and very unsupported. Berkeley was one of our few centers. This takes me back to Eye in the Sky, etc. I was a vocal and active part of the 60s counterculture, faith of to tears. What I am saying is that because of being with Nancy, I, who was by physical age part of the 50s, entered the youth culture of the 60s and even onto the 70s, by which time my writing was having a decided influence. A PKD cult existed by the time Tears came out. I was, am, still in touch into the late 70s. Early 50s to late 70s. Not bad. Contrast this to other SF writers. Have there been any quasi-Marxist SF writers besides me in 30 years? Tom Dish says no, and Aquarian says no. Now there are, finally. But they're hired and bought. They don't matter. It's too late, all over. Barry Malzberg, in reviewing the Ballantine collection, pointed out my early anti-war themes. Defenders, Imposter, Second Variety, Foster, You're Dead, Breakfast at Twilight, etc. He feels it's overlooked. This may be so, but Lem and Fitting show that the metaphysical preoccupations, e.g. Ubik, are even more subversive to capitalist society. After all, the Ramparts people knew to approach me, the sole SF writer who signed the petition, the Manifesto of the 500. Glanced over Solar Lottery and Tom Dish's intro, he's right. I was, am, the sole Marxist SF writer. I may not have been MCP, Communist Party, but the basic Marxist sociological view of capitalism, negative, is there. Note. Despite the flip-flops that litter the exegesis, it is still surprising to see Dick declare that capitalism is negative. True, unchecked and ruthless market capitalism is a bad thing in Dick's fiction, in stories like Autofac, 1955, and The Three Stigmata of Palmer Eldritch, 1965, capitalism spreads like a virus, infecting and commodifying everything around it. But Dick also consistently champions the small businessman. Many of Dick's novels begin with a shopkeeper sweeping his storefront, holding the chaos at bay. Like repairmen and craftspeople, these small-time entrepreneurs counteract the inevitable running down of things, and Dick often highlights the quiet dignity of their modest but honest business life. Dick's experience during his teenage years of working for a local businessman named Herb Hollis instilled in him a profound work ethic and a sense that small businesses hold society together. Dick was not so much anti-capitalist as he was against massive and pervasive corporate capitalism. I think the mom-and-pop shop on the corner held an almost pastoral appeal for him, and he probably would not have been a Walmart fan. D.G. End note. Good. But after glancing at it, I feel the old fear, like circa 1971 to 1973, up to the month Tears was published, up to 374, when the blow fell. Glancing at Solar Lottery, I can see that it had to eventually, and that I knew it. If I just hadn't passed over into the dope stuff, I'd have ceased to be relevant and been safe. But no, I got caught up in the 60s and stayed on to 74 and Tears. Folder 8, Early 1979. 8-4. An overriding quiddity of the 2374 experience is this. It's as if certain books of mine went out from me. Unteleported Man, Ubik, Tears, etc. And then years later, or weeks, came back. Like in F. Brown's The Waveries, in signal form, including the bichlorides info, like an answer to a question which I had previously, maybe years before, posed. Note. Bichlorides is a puzzling term that Dick received from the voice, and which he discusses in earlier pages excluded here. End note. It was all 2374, like a mind responding to my mind as I expressed it in my books. What if The Bichlorides was a title to a book not yet then published, i.e., Why the Occlusion Expressed in Scanner? This strongly implies contact with the future. 8-5. The Empire may not be a congealed permutation, stasis of the dialectic, but the one, which the macro brain desires to and works to avoid, since its uniformity is entropy itself. In a sense, it may be that the Empire is any stagnation so rigid that with it, by reason of it, the dialectic ceases. Put another way, when we see it, we know that stagnation has occurred. This is how we within the program experience congealing. We see, or should see, the BIP. We are supposed to combat it phagocyte-wise, but the very valence of the BIP stasis warps us into micro-extensions of itself. This is precisely why it is so dangerous. This is the dread thing it does, extending its android thinking, uniformity, more and more extensively. It exerts a dreadful and subtle power. And more people fall into its field, power, by means of which it grows, thus thwarting the dialectic more and more. The macro brain is well aware of this. It has seen Christianity itself, its own doctrine, congeal due to this valence. The very doctrine of combating the hostile world and its power has, to a large extent, been ossified by and put at the service of the Empire. Thus I deduce that the power magnitude of the BIP congealed stasis is very great. The explanation of who or what fed me back my books, in particular Ubik, in 374, is found in the contents of Ubik itself, i.e., the formulation of the information entity Ubik. Obviously, I envisioned an entity which actually existed and, therefore, which responded with a feedback confirmation. One could analyze this theoretically, viz., if there were a macro information entity and you presented a fairly accurate formulation of it, you could reasonably expect the entity to fire a confirmation at you. Since the formulation puts it forth as helpful and benign, in fact, interventive, in fact, one could test as to whether such an entity exists by presenting a formulation of it, and then seeing if it responded based on the built-in quality attributed to it, that if it existed, it could be expected to respond. In other words, via the tentative formulation, one could come into contact with it if indeed it existed. As I recall, there is some theory about this vis-a-vis contacting ETIs. If they return the info you transmit, specifically if the info is selectively modified, you know you've made contact with what you're trying to make contact with. The point of it returning your info to you, modified, is that it doesn't speak your language or even think like humans. So to create a signal you can recognize as sentient, it must utilize to some extent the info you sent to it. 8.7. This still doesn't tell me who what has responded, or even where it is. But I have been in dialogue with it for almost 5 years now. The Ubik material would seem to point to it being Ubik-like. Seem to. I can't be sure. Or did it only simulate Ubik qualities in order to read back my writing? It seemed so much like Ubik. This may have been a way of communicating with me, which I really didn't catch on to until now, actually. It may be quite alien to us humans. If to communicate with me, it had to take on Ubik qualities, it must be really dysmorphic to us. This is frightening. I am now in the position of having to dismiss all attributes which it disclosed as being possibly only simulations mimicking Ubik in order for it to be comprehensible and syntonic, nicht fremd to me. Possibly. I can't be sure. This is a very sophisticated analysis of Valis nature. I'm going to leap to a conclusion based on the Acts and other Christian material. I think it is indeed the Holy Spirit, which took a Valis-like, i.e. Ubik-like form out of considerateness toward me, but I hesitate to essay anything in the way of assertions about its actual, real, not simulated nature. After all, if it is the Holy Spirit, it is the Supreme Being Himself. I am He which causes to be. I am what I am. I assess its taking a form compatible to me as 1. A gracious act of loving deference, and 2. Valuable, if not necessary, for it to communicate with me. I do not construe it as deception, but as a virtual necessity, and certainly done for my sake. It shaped itself to my conception of the Logos, i.e. it. When I reflect on the form it took, I can appreciate that this form would be the most acceptable possible to me, as disclosed by my conception in Ubik. It tailored itself to my stated conception, my highest conception. But also, it testified to me of the living reality now of Christ and the joy involved, the preparations for His return. Note: just as the exegesis responds to Dick's calling, so readers of the exegesis may be called on to investigate Dick's claims, to test them through what B. Allen Wallace dubs contemplative science. This means that, along with Dick, we must be wary of treating our investigations as anything more than models of reality. The Son, discussed elsewhere by Dick, is born out of the immaculate conception of thought, the removal or emptying of previous thought formations. This path of contemplative science can be hard going. Dick asks us to consider the idea that our sense of historical ground does not exist, where nothing important has changed since ancient Rome. Humans suffer, are exploited by large-scale institutions, grow old, become ever more confused, and die. Buddhism describes this as samsara, the wheel of dharma. Nietzsche's Zarathustra describes the repetition driving history as the most terrifying thought, the thought of eternal return. But Dick suggests that it is through practices of contemplation and exegesis that the real horror, the false perception of linear time, is overcome. This is not the rapture predicted by fundamentalist Christianity, but the corrected perception of our nature as both human and eternal. R.D. Endnote. 8.9. Number 1. One mind there is, but under it two principles contend. Recently, I have forgot my own tractate. My experience with the dialectic agrees with the formulation in the tractate and hence in Valis. It is stipulated as basic. The ability of Valis to assume the particular form most syntonic to me, the form of Ubik, is connected with its basic mimicking ability, which I have already written about. It never occurred to me that zebra as a form was just another mimicking until the last couple of days when I realized that it conformed in all respects to my conception of the deity, the Logos, as I naturally put forth in Ubik. This realization undermines the probity of my reams of description of Zebra. I have only described what my own head construes the deity to be like, a self-portrait, albeit a modern, complex, and sophisticated apprehension of the deity. It is quite subjective and quite culturally determined, i.e., a cybernetics biological model. As shown in Ubik, I conceive of God as isomorphic to my own brain. Thus, I encounter a macro brain arranging reality into information, a projection on my part. It was a macro mirror. Note: Dick's realization that the deity he describes is a projection of his own beliefs leads him to the conclusion that God has manifested himself in precisely the form he had already accepted and was prepared to believe in. What lines of reasoning insulate Dick from the other obvious conclusion that what he has described not only takes the form of his projection, but is his projection? There seem to be two answers to this question. First, his prior commitment to the existence of the deity, and second, his earlier theory about the deity's ability to mimic reality in all kinds of ways. A deity that can mimic what we take to be reality becomes, in effect, bulletproof against any objection, for any deviation or change in what for us constitutes reality can be explained by the difference between a deity that simply is reality and one that mimics reality. NKH. End note. My brain to Ubik to Zebra. Mimicry. It analyzed my preconceptions, what I'd expect. Ubik isn't the sole source. Ubik just demonstrates my conception. Even if I hadn't written Ubik, the conception would be there. Everyone has a conception of the deity. I don't feel it duped me. I think it had to take some form. And it took the one I'd expect and like. It took this form for these reasons. My realization of its mimicry ability should have made me think of this possibility before now. But then, does not this mean that Zebra is the deity inasmuch as it took the form which I conceive the deity as taking? Or at least it is reasonable to suppose it is the deity. I can say that I now realize that what I saw Zebra perfectly fits my deepest and most profound conception, down to all fine details of the deity. What could, one, know my conception, and, two, assume it, but the deity? So actually, these realizations bolster the argument that what I experienced was the deity, rather than undermine it. 8.11. So Zebra is a macro feedback circuit regarding my micro conception as expressed in Ubik especially, but not limited to Ubik. Does this verify the hermetic above as below cosmology, Bruno's mirror? Or is this a case where an assumption that Ubik exists serves as a hypothesis which gets tested due to its very formulation and publishing thereof? If it's correct, a response comes. If not, then not. In this case, the hypothesis is confirmed by the response, because undoubtedly, Zebra's epiphany is a response. Somehow this resembles my concept of the self-perpetuating dialectic. A correct hypothesis will be responded to, as if automatically, since such a response is included in the conceptual formulation. There is then an up-by-his-bootstraps element in the fact of Zebra's epiphany. If you even just happen to formulate properly, you can be certain of the epiphany response. It's like asking the right question. That's all that's needed. This takes me back to my idea of our simulated reality being a teaching machine, of which you must discern what question to ask of it. This means that in the 3-decade evolution of my epistemological investigation, I asked the right question, or put forth the correct formulation, apparently best put forth in Ubik. So I see Zebra's resemblance to Ubik as a subtle but vigorous confirmation of my formulation of Ubik and the nature of our reality, our situation put forth in Ubik. Even if the entity which responded tailored its gestalt to fit my Ubik formulation, even totally tailored. It can't be totally. The ability to do this tailoring is a major part of my formulation, vide, Ubik, etc. I suspect that an analysis of my formulation of the nature of Ubik would disclose a presentation of the mimicry ability, since ubiquity is stipulated, ubiquity and invisibility. Hence, mimesis or mimicry is implied if not overtly stated. So its taking the form it took toward me leads me back to a recognition of what must be a fundamental quality of it, its mimicking ability. This is an exciting realization. I have been right to conceive this as basic to it, camouflage. Then it is, in some sense, an invader, probably from outside the program or simulated reality, as Ubik is in Ubik. This was primary with Ubik, this invasion of our simulated world. So the insight that the form which Zebra took was a calculated simulation of Ubik only refers me back to my previous insight of the camouflage capacity of the entity, camouflaged here in our world, perceiving but unperceived. 8.13. Voice. It assimilated three of my books. It is, after all, living information. My writing is information. The books incorporated into a life form. Lord. Powers. It let the courier have a glimpse of the info he was carrying. 8.19. Valis is the real and rational world breaking into, invading as in, e.g. Ubik, our simulated and irrational world. I am saying, Valis is a world, the real world. Ubik is to the cold pack world, as Valis is to our world. If Ubik and Valis are one and the same, our world is both irreal, Ubik, and irrational, Valis. We're missing half our stereo signal, what I call the upper realm, one. This notion that in 2374 the real broke into the irreal, as in Ubik, is acosmic and Gnostic. And it agrees with another Gnostic idea, put forth in Valis, that the creator of this world is irrational. A superimposition of Ubik and Valis is a superimposition of two basic Gnostic ideas, one cosmological, the other cosmogonical. It's very interesting what you get if you superimpose Valis over Ubik. And I had previously seen that Valis is an electronic circuit-like feedback of Ubik and mixing, enriching, etc.